Boone Shepherd's American Adventure by Gabriel Bergmoser. Lord Huxley. You will forgive me dispensing with the pleasantries. Promethea and I are preparing to stow away on a ship out of London, but the police are not far behind. I'm using precious time to write this letter, which I've arranged to be delivered to you on the last day of 1966, many years from now. Should I get back home before then, I will have to intercept it, as there are certain things I only want you to know if I don't make it back. Currently, Promethea and I are alive, although no thanks to you. A word of advice for the future. Don't send a journalist and a photographer to investigate a missing persons case. Send the bloody police. Because what we found was an enormous secret prison that was being used to hold innocent people until they were sent back in time to 1883 to be experimented on by a mad scientist. Does that sound crazy? Try living it. Coincidentally, I had a personal stake in the whole debacle. The fact is that I haven't been completely honest with you about who I am. It's true that I am a journalist named Boone Shepherd who works for you and finds you to be a singularly average employer, but there's a little more to me than that. I was born in Australia in 1865 and came to London when I was quite young to pursue a career as a journalist after turning in my violent criminal father and pitting my family against me. Remember that because it's important. In the 1880s, I worked for your ancestor, Rasputin Huxley V, who was just as much of a git as you are. During this time, I met a woman named Marbia, the best person I ever knew. But we fell afoul of a scientist named Vladimir Draculius. Marbia was killed and I was blamed for her death. Before I could be arrested, I stole the time machine, fled to the future, and started working for you. Improbably, it turned out that the prison we found when you sent Promethea and I to Scotland was presided over by my estranged brother Darius, who never forgave me for our father's capture. Darius searched for me with a second time machine, and as he travelled, he became obsessed with the idea of immortality. So he hired a scientist to help him achieve his goal, using test subjects he kidnapped from throughout time. That scientist was none other than Vladimir Draculius. They're both dead now, my brother and Draculius. I won't go into specifics, but suffice to say that I owe quite a bit to Promethea Peters. Although, since she also lost the time machine that was our means of getting home, my gratitude is somewhat compromised. So now we are stuck in the year 1884. I don't know what you'll make of this letter, but at least someone will know what happened to us. Although Promethea assures me that if we don't make it back, she will slip a variety of disease-infected rodents into my bed while distributing cheese throughout my clothing. I don't know how she intends to pull that off, but I think it's safer not to dwell on it. In short, we really need to get home. Yours in exasperation, Boone Shepherd. Prologue. The desert stretched out far below her, and she allowed herself to smile. There were no barriers, nothing to stop her from plummeting except her own control. She had never slipped, and she knew she never would. She laughed at people who were scared of heights. If you trusted yourself, there was no need to fear anything. She took a step a little closer to the metallic edge and looked directly up into the clear velvet blue of the evening sky. There was nothing more beautiful than that blue sky. She closed her eyes and took a long, deep breath of the warm air. From here, she could feel the future. From here, she could feel what would be hers, as long as she stayed the course and trusted herself. As long as she didn't slip.
Miss Kane!
She felt a flicker of annoyance, a tiny burn at the edge of her complete calm, but she did not react. She would turn around in her own time.
Miss Kane!
She turned. One of the guards, dressed in black with his face hidden behind a white mask, stood in front of the glass elevator that protruded from the metal floor, the only disturbance on the vast expanse that was the roof of her kingdom. He wasn't alone. His gloved hand rested on the shoulder of a skinny man in a baggy suit. The man's hair was long and his mustache needed a trim. He looked miserable. That was good. She could use miserable. "Hello, Mr. McManus," she said. "Welcome to my casino." He looked around with a frown. "Never seen a casino that flies before." She shrugged. "People had never seen a car before somebody invented the first one. I consider myself a pioneer." She gestured for him to join her. He glanced at the guard, took a deep breath, and walked over. She nodded to the guard, and he returned to the elevator chamber. She turned back towards the desert as the man came to a halt slightly behind her. For a moment she wondered if he would push her, but he needed her more than she needed him. It was important to make sure that was always the case in these situations. "I understand you're something of a pioneer yourself," she said. "Musically, that is. The Bugs are the biggest band in the world, correct?"
"Were," he muttered.
She could hear his bitterness. "Were," she said, "before a young journalist uncovered a terrible secret about you. What was his name?"
"Boone Shepherd."
The man's previously gentle voice had become a growl. "I suppose it is a hard thing, learning that your manager murdered one of your members and replaced him with a lookalike. It would seem Boone Shepherd did you a favor."
"Suppose he did," McManus said. "Except even with the fake Hunter Eccleston, we were bigger than... well, we were big. Now we're reduced to playing rubbish bars to make ends meet."
"I take it you want to return to the top," she said.
"Not possible," he said. "Not after a scandal like that."
She slowly swept one arm out, gesturing towards the desert. "What do you see, Mr. McManus?" He looked where she pointed, and perhaps unconsciously took a step back. Possibility scared some people.
"Too big a distance between me and the ground."
"A blank canvas on which the future can be written," she corrected. "Your future has not yet been written, Mr. McManus. That is something we have in common. Perhaps with a little mutual assistance we may yet get where we should be." The man looked confused. She resisted rolling her eyes. "You are uniquely placed to help me get what I want," she said. "I am uniquely placed to do the same for you. But first, I want you to tell me everything you know about Boone Shepherd." Evening darkened into night as McManus spoke. She smiled. She loved the darkness. Everything seemed possible in the darkness. Her office always felt cramped after the roof. Walls were confining, and it didn't matter to her that one of those walls was a window that looked out over an astounding view. A view meant nothing when something separated you from it. She took a seat behind her desk and glanced at the newspaper article she had been reading. Chronicle journalists missing in Scotland, presumed dead. She wondered if she had miscalculated. Well, the best plans responded to change, and she would have to find a way to make that change work for her. But she hoped that things had gone the way she intended. If Boone Shepherd had indeed been killed in Scotland, then part of her masterpiece would go unfinished. There was a knock at the door. She pushed away her concerns and called the person in. Another of the guards, or maybe the same one. Those awful masks made it hard to tell. They would be the first thing to go once she succeeded.
"Miss Kane, something terrible has happened. You must come at once."
Excitement swelled inside her. She adopted a concerned expression. "Terrible," she said. "What do you mean?"
"I was only told to fetch you. You'll have to see for yourself."
Part of her wanted to tell the impertinent fool that she would go nowhere without information, but curiosity won out, and so she stood and followed the guard through the clinical, smooth white halls the guards sometimes complained about. On the days she felt the most cornered, she'd like to know that the canvas remained blank. They arrived at a doorway like all the others, a barely discernible outline in the wall that slid aside when the guard pressed a hand to a concealed panel beside it. Through the door was an empty white room, occupied only by another doorway, this one freestanding in the center, filled with swirling blue smoke wrapped in thick cables. She paused. Her excitement grew. Without waiting for the guard's instruction, she walked forwards and into the mist. For a moment, she felt the strange sensation of floating through something thicker than smoke and lighter than water, and then she was stepping into another empty room, this one with wooden floors and peeling walls. She crossed to the heavy door at the far side of the room and stepped out into the snowy cold night air. She glanced up and down the street. All stately manor houses, like the one she had just left, the one that on the outside looked just as majestic and well-maintained as all the others, but that housed nothing but a portal to another time and place. She crossed the street, heading for the house directly opposite. She pushed open the gate and walked into the hall.
ignoring the dusty portraits and statues that filled it. Her heart rate was picking up. She reached the spiral staircase at the end of the hall and began to descend, down into the strange red light that filled the huge basement space. She came to a halt, staring at what was in front of her. The basement had once been an enormous lab, full of metal walkways suspended above the huge bubbling vats, home to machinery and scientists bustling about the place, working on the many experiments the narrow-minded call terrifying, but to her always seemed merely wasteful. She supposed, in a sense, it still was that, but it had been rearranged, and not in a way its owner would have liked. Half of the walkways had collapsed. Several were broken on the ground, others bent and twisted around each other. Many of the turrets they stood on seemed severely corroded, and it only took a few moments to answer the question of how that had happened. Two of the vats on the ground floor had been overturned. She did not like to think about what they had held, but whatever it was obviously had no issue eating through metal. "What happened here?" she asked as another guard approached her.
"We're trying to work that out."
"Has Draculius seen it?" The guard's silence was the best answer she could have heard. She kept going down the stairs until she had reached the concrete floor. Several feet away stood more guards, standing around something as if protecting it. Yet as she neared them, it became clear that what they were surrounding was no longer in need of protection. It would never need protection again. While he lived, many had thought him a vampire. His pale skin, dark clothing, and cold demeanor encouraged the notion. Lying dead on the floor, he looked like what he was, just a man, now silenced forever by the bullet hole in his head. But he wasn't lying there alone, and as she took in the second body, she placed a hand over her mouth in case she did smile. As a child growing up on the cold streets of London, she'd often peered in through the windows of houses at Christmas time, looking at the children her age, smiling and laughing as they got all the things they wanted. She could never imagine how that must feel. All she had ever wanted in those days was a meal and a warm bed. But now, she thought she knew exactly how Christmas must have felt. The second man looked older, worn down by a long life and his own demons. His lank hair obscured his lined face, but she still knew exactly who he was. Darius Shepherd, the Duke of Babel, the man who had put all of this in motion. The man she had based her entire gamble around. And the gamble had paid off. She turned to the guard. "We have to move fast if things are to work out the way they need to." She pushed past him, moving back towards the stairs.
"The way they need to," the guard exclaimed, following her. "Miss Kane, the Duke is dead. Draculius is dead. What is going to happen now?"
This time, Addison Kane didn't even try to hide her smile. "The future,"